Everyone is on.
Introducing
Pretty Girls Love Real Estate. Stories of everyday women breaking barriers and building wealth through real estate.
Let's get it.
Boss. B-O-S-S.
Hello, hello. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. And today I'm so excited because we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is real estate development. And again, I have one of my sorors here. Shout out to Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. Got one of my other sorors in the building once again. Her name is Jessica Jones. She's also got an awesome name. She is the real estate development manager for Enterprise Community Development, and she does all types of development projects, affordable housing, solar energy, green energy initiatives. So I'm excited to talk about her, and she deals primarily in Washington, D.C., all throughout the PG County area, all the way up to Baltimore. So I'm really excited to hear all the things that she's got going on. She's highly recommended. So I'm glad that, you know, we're able to take some time for us today. So thank you, Jessica. How are you?
Thank you, Jessica, for having me. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Like I told you, I had a million things going on today, but I'm glad that we, you know, were able to take this time to have this conversation. I know when we first talked a couple weeks ago, like we had like a 15-minute conversation and you dropped a whole bunch of gems on me that I didn't know. So I was like, we have to extend this conversation and, you know, talk more and spread your wisdom to, you know, everybody else out there listening. So let's just jump into it. So first and foremost, I just want to know about you and how you came to be interested in real estate and kind of what all brought you to this point.
Yeah, sure. So thanks again for having me today. Really excited to be here. What a journey. So I actually studied architecture at Morgan State University, go Bears, Baltimore, Maryland. I'm from this area, born and raised, born in DC, but raised in my home is Maryland. And basically at Morgan State, I studied architecture and about halfway into my program, one of my teachers said to me, you know, if you're an architect, you don't make a lot of money, but you gotta love it. I'm like, okay, you know. And back then she was saying, you know, you gotta be like mid-career to make like $80,000. And I'm like, mid-career? Like, that's not a lot of money. So I said, maybe I don't want to be an architect. So one of my elective classes was affordable housing planning, and I had never heard of really development. I didn't know what it was. I took this class and I loved it. I took it like my junior year in school, loved it so much. Got an internship at Baltimore Development Corporation that summer, and really the rest is history. I've been working towards affordable housing concentration in real estate development since then. So that was like 2005, 2006. Yeah. And from there, I graduated with my architecture degree in 2007. And that fall, I enrolled in the University of Maryland College Park. They have a master's in real estate development. So I did that, graduated from there in December 2009. Right around the time our economy was tanking in real estate. So most of our speakers while I was in school said, you know, stay in school as long as you can. There's nothing really out here. And it was true. From there, I decided to learn more about green building. I thought it was cool. U.S. Green Building Council came out with LEED, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. I decided to get accredited in that certification. And from there, I was like, okay, well, let me learn a little more. I went and worked at SAIC. It's like a Fortune 500 company in their real estate and sustainability division. And from there, I did green building consulting for a small group in DC for about 3.5 years. Finally, in 2012, the market started coming back. I got connected with Community Preservation and Development Corporation, CPDC, in October of 2012. And I've been there ever since. We merged with Enterprise Homes in January of this year. So now CPDC and Enterprise Homes came together, and now we're Enterprise Community Development. So I've been in the same company for October 1st will be 8 years, merging affordable housing and sustainability together, because I believe that you don't have to make a lot of money to live in a healthy, sustainable place. You know, it shouldn't be reserved for those who can only afford it. So it's kind of a 30,000 view of how I got to where I am today. But it's been a great ride. It's been a good journey.
No, that's awesome. And a couple of episodes ago when I was talking to Maisha, she was saying, we were saying that we're kind of jealous of people that got their degree in like real estate development or real estate finance, because now that, you know, we're all in real estate now, those are like very much needed skills. And I know a bunch of the connections that you were able to make while you were at College Park were sure invaluable. So I just want to talk about what's, now that you've been with Enterprise Community Development now for 8 years, what is the one, I guess, major project that you would say that you've worked on and you were, you know, pretty much the big wig on site that you really oversaw and, you know, seen through to fruition?
That would be my solar project. That's my baby. So back in 2015, a colleague, peer from National Housing Trust, they're also a nonprofit in DC, based in DC, but they're national. They're like policy and they do development. They reached out to us and said, hey, you want to put solar on your buildings? And we're like, solar? Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, Jessica's our green person. I'm sure she's interested. And I was. I'm like, yeah, if we can own our own solar panels, why not? Like, it's, to me, you have a lot of companies out here trying to put panels on roofs. And they're like, oh, I'll lease it to you for this much money, or I'll give you a discount on your electricity. But if you can afford to buy the panels yourself, you get better returns. So, of course, we're interested. Let's talk. 2015, we started. We didn't close on the project until November 2018. We had to get roof surveys done. We needed a solar tax credit investor. We went through four of them. We needed debt, we needed grants, we needed everything. And it was not easy. So we ended up installing solar on 12 of our properties in DC. So it totals about 1 megawatt of power, which is really, really impressive. It is one of the largest, if not the largest, affordable housing solar project by a nonprofit developer in DC. We did receive grants from DC Department of Energy and NeighborWorks. And we had two lenders. We finally found an equity investor and some more like sponsor equity. And with all that, it was about a $4 million solar project. A lot of heartburn, a lot of heartache, but it's one of my favorites because it's, no one in my company has ever done it before. Most people in DC hadn't done it before. And to be a Black woman doing something like this, it was pretty impressive. I mean, I was excited. Like, I couldn't believe we finally got it done. So to see, people still send me pictures now, like, look at this. Like, they're on a roof and they look over and they see like this huge, like 400 kilowatt system in Southeast DC. And they're like, that's a enterprise project. And I'm like, yeah, I was the developer, you know, I managed it. What do you want to know? Nice. It's really cool. Really cool.
And you said it's in Southeast. Where about in Southeast?
Oh, we have a few in Southeast. So this one is Oxford Manor. It's actually right off of, not too far off of 295, near the Naylor Road metro station. So it's not too far from there. This one is our largest system in the entire portfolio. So it's 1,000 kilowatt hours, right? Or kilowatts. 400 of those came from this one site. So it's like huge. It's a master metered property, which means we pay all the utility bills. Mm-hmm. So we basically installed as much solar as we could. And what we ended up doing, because we did have to take out loans for these projects, we are still billing the property, but we're billing the property at a discount. And the savings that they're getting from that discount stays with the property and goes into resident programming. So we're saving enough money at Oxford Manor, over $20,000 a year, which could help pay for a part-time community benefit, like resident service manager.
Awesome. How many units is that?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. I don't know how much Oxford is. I should be ashamed of myself. The whole portfolio is about 2,000 units. Wow. Of affordable housing. I cannot remember how many units are at Oxford, though. Probably 200. I think it's like 180 or 200.
No, but that's amazing, though, especially, you know, everybody knows that D.C., everybody who was previously a resident, a lot of people are getting pushed out. So the need for affordable housing is vast and drastic. So the fact that you guys have at least 2,000 units, maybe more.
We have more. Yeah, most of our, so we put solar on all, most of our properties. There's like two or three that didn't get solar. Mm-hmm. So we have a few more properties in D.C., total, we have probably 2,500 or 2,700 units in DC. Okay. Throughout Northeast, Northwest, and Southeast.
Okay, so just back up for a second, because some people may not be familiar with solar energy and how it kind of powers your electrical systems in the building. Sure. I guess with this, the way that you guys built it, how does that affect with tenants? You know, how much they can expect to pay for their electricity versus the traditional methods of building.
So this one was done a few years ago. So DC has made a lot of changes since we started our project, but basically I'm going to throw out some jargon and try to keep it watered down. But basically what we ended up doing is we did net metered solar. So basically we went behind the meter and we only added solar to the common area meters. That is site lighting, community centers, things like that. Mm-hmm. The reason we didn't touch the actual residents' electricity is because at the time there were a lot of regulations we had to go through that would have taken more time and money. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't afford it. So we only used the meters that we actually paid the bills for.
Okay.
So in doing that, the residents don't see a change. They continue to pay their bills. The benefit comes in because we own the panels. We were able to discount the utility. So let's say they pay $1,000 to Pepco a month. Now they only pay $700. So that $300, well, they're really probably only saving $200. They'll pay us $100. The $200 they're saving stays at the property and it goes towards either food distribution or community service manager, or a lot of our residents have asked for PPEs. They want masks and hand sanitizer right now. So that money stays at the property and goes to the residents.
Okay.
Through benefits.
Yeah, any little savings helps, especially in these times. So, okay. And now you said it was, there was like specific laws or sanctions in DC, which made it a little bit more expensive. Just Stepping back from that, would you say, what would be the, I know like Baltimore and DC are really hot development markets now. So what would you say is the easiest or the hardest, or is there pros and cons to developing in either of those cities?
Yeah, so real estate development wise, DC is, you know, it's DC. There's a lot of funding in DC, mm-hmm. a lot of gentrification happening in DC. We want to save, you know, we want folks to be able to stay in their homes. And I mean, when you and I were talking a few weeks ago, you know, I was saying Anacostia, you know, changing, you know, who wanted to go east of the river? Now everybody wants to go. Yeah. And our job, and, you know, is to make sure that folks aren't getting kicked out. They're not moving into Prince George's County because they can't afford DC no more. If they want to stay in DC, they should be able to stay in DC. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our purpose. In Baltimore, the things are, you know, it's happening there too. We have a property I worked on specifically in Baltimore. It was actually a public housing property. And if you're familiar with Poppleton, off of Martin Luther King Jr. Highway, it's right off of West Baltimore Street in Southwest Baltimore. And it's right near the University of Maryland Biopark. And that whole area is changing. I mean, right next to our building, they developed a huge apartment complex with the rent starting at like $2,000 for one bedroom. And our property's right next door, and it's residents who, you know, subsidized are paying $1,200 for a one bedroom. Wow. Subsidized. They're not paying that whole thing. You know, they're only paying 30%, but it's changing. It has started.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, everybody's moving up to Baltimore now. It's kind of like the next frontier. If you can't get into DC, Baltimore is close enough. Mm-hmm. But it's a totally, I want everybody to know out there, like, DC and Baltimore are not the same place.
No, they're not. The transportation's different. The cost of living is different. Mm-hmm. DC prices are just much higher than they are in Baltimore. But a lot of folks live in Baltimore and commute down to DC because they can't afford to live in DC.
Right. Okay. All right. So before, you also mentioned about the big project you were talking about. You said there's challenges from being a woman of color in the development landscape. So, you know, I got to talk about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, through your career and your experience doing the development, you know, how has it been kind of navigating this world, obviously, where there are not a lot of people that look like us?
Yeah, and it's gotten somewhat better. But yeah, even at Maryland, when I was in school at Maryland, there might have been less than five of us that were Black. Woman, it was me and someone else. Like, it was, and this was over 10 years ago. I'm looking at the date right now. It was over 10 years ago. So it's changing, but we're still in the minority, and it's still a good old boys club. But at CPDC, now Enterprise, my first boss is amazing. Shalinda Brown. She's a rock star. She's a Black lady. When I first got there, she was turning 40. So, but I mean, when Shalinda walks in a room, everyone stopped. And, you know, I had to ask her, I'm like, how do you deal with this? Like, because it's not easy to get to this point. And, you know, she's always supported me. She's like, you know, you got to speak up. You got to let people know that, yeah, you don't know everything, but, you know, we're the owner in this case. Like, you have to listen to us. You have to respect us. And if you don't, you know, we're not going to pay you, or we're not going to do business with you again. It's a sense of authority, I guess, if you will. Like, I've always been the one that's, you know, quiet, sitting in the background, just kind of like seeing how things go. When it comes to real estate, you gotta speak up. You gotta let people know you're there. You deserve a seat at the table just like everybody else. And you get respect that way. You really do. Like, it took a while for me to get to that point. But yeah, now, like when, you know, I go into a room, a virtual room or whatever, they're like, oh, you know, Jessica's here, how you doing? You know, whereas before it was, you know, I come in, no one knows who I am. It just, you know, she's an associate, she's young, she'll be fine. It takes a lot of time to get to that level. But I'd say just don't give up on it.
Definitely. When I was in New York, I was at a like a fundraising event and mm-hmm. it was like an award ceremony. And there was a lady who was really big in real estate development. She was a minority. And as she was accepting her award, one of the things that she said is use your diversity to your advantage in this space, because, you know, you walk into a room, obviously you're going to stand out like a sore thumb, like, because you mm-hmm. look different, you sound different. You got a different swag than everybody right. else that was there before. So use it to your advantage, because obviously you're going to be memorable like that because you stand out. So
that's true.
Be the best that you can be and, you know, make an impression like that. And you know, use that being able to stand out to your advantage. And so also I want to talk about some of the other programs that you informed me about as far as more diversity and getting more people of color and more women involved in real estate development. Like I told you, I'm an alumni of Project REAP in New York mm-hmm. City, but they also have that program in DC. But there's a couple other programs that you sent over to me. So can you just talk a little bit about those and your involvement with them so far?
Yeah, sure. So one of the ones I didn't mention, but I put in the email, Women of Color and Community Development, WCCD, WCCD.org. Mm-hmm. They, it's a fairly new organization, a trade group, a few years old now. My boss, Shalinda, she's still my boss to this day. She's actually one of the board members now for WCCD, but they're awesome. They have like webinars, they have like, now they're virtual brunches, but they were doing brunches to like network and empower one another, just support each other. Because, you know, being a woman and being a woman of color in economic development, real estate development, it's still a minority. We're still in the minority. So anyway, we can come together, learn from each other, lift each other up. That's an awesome group to do it with. As far as affordable housing goes, there's two big trade groups in the district. One is HAN, the Housing Association for Nonprofit Developers. Their executive director is Heather Raspberry, a Black woman. She's phenomenal. I love Heather. She's great. And then CNHED, the Coalition for Coalition for Nonprofit Housing Economic Development. It's another nonprofit type trade group. Stephen Glaud is their executive director. Mm-hmm. He's a nice guy. And you also mentioned like not having like, you know, a development background or education. That's okay. It's never too late. University of Maryland, they have their master's program, but they also have a certification. It's basically the same thing as the master's without the capstone thesis at the end. So the director of the program is Maria Day Marshall. She's an older African-American woman. She's phenomenal. I love Maria. She actually used to oversee DC's housing finance agency mm-hmm. some years ago, but she's in Maryland now. And if you didn't want to go back to like a university, you have NDC. It's the National Development Council. So they have a Housing Development Finance Professional certification. It is a phenomenal certification to take. I mean, I took it some years ago, and as far as finance goes, it'll tell you from soup to nuts everything you need to know about real estate development. It's phenomenal. It's not cheap, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm gonna definitely have to check it out. Yes. I've got enough student loan debt now, but some of those other like nonprofit organizations and whatnot, I'll definitely have to tap into.
Please do.
For sure. Okay, and just in general, in the DC and Maryland environment, like DC is almost, I feel like, pretty much spoken for. Is there any other areas within that kind of region that you would say that, you know, you're interested in getting more involved in, or there's some projects coming up that you're excited about?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that's coming, it's been coming for years, it's finally here, is this Purple Line. It swings from New Carrollton in Prince George's County over to Montgomery County. I can't remember the last like line, but it goes around the Beltway. And they're building. I mean, if you are driving in downtown Silver Spring or you're driving over in Riverdale in Prince George's County, it's just everywhere. So they have a Purple Line coalition group that basically folks from the University of Maryland, developers, both for-profit and nonprofit, market rate and affordable housing, policymakers, they're all on this coalition trying to make sure that, you know, those areas aren't gentrified, but also bringing more density. So as far as enterprise goes, we have a project literally right on the Purple Line. It's within walking distance to one of the stops. So my colleague is working on it, but it's pretty cool that, you know, yes, we have a seat at the table because we actually do own a property right at the Purple Line. It's definitely a new development that if folks are looking to, you know, get into real estate somehow, being near or within a close proximity to the Purple Line is really exciting times right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Anywhere that's close to any transportation, mm-hmm. like super valuable right now. If people aren't aware, like majority of the industry in DC is centered around the federal government. So
yep.
Like you were saying, you was telling me on the phone, like a lot of those markets, like outside of the Beltway, like you said, like even Gaithersburg, Rockville, yes. way up there are starting to get more attractive now.
Yeah, I mean, you have Clarksburg. I mean, there's a new outlets out in Clarksburg, Maryland. I mean, I remember Clarksburg as being, you know, oh, is that near Hagerstown? No, it's actually closer than that. But they have a brand new, like, town center outlet thing out there. And I mean, it's people, they have beautiful homes starting at $600,000 and up.
Wow.
Right? Yeah.
That's still affordable when it comes to that area.
It is. Starting.
Oh, we weren't starting. Like you can get four walls basically, but not anything else.
Right.
Okay, cool. So is there anything else that you or your company have that you're working on that you're, you know, wanna just share with us now?
So you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic, unfortunately. Two of the projects I'm personally working on are stalled right now because of COVID-related things. We're looking to, you know, still move forward, but it's not easy. I mean, if I'm just being real, I should be really, really busy right now. Instead, I'm waiting to hear from people, like when people start to get a little more comfortable with where we are right now as a country. As you know, one of the projects is a occupied senior housing complex. Mm-hmm. Trying to do some kind of construction work or just getting folks in and out of a senior property right now is scary. It's people don't want to do it. You know, it, you know, well, what if, like, what if I'm that one that brings in COVID and, you know, people are losing their lives? It's not easy. So unfortunately, two of the projects I'm working on are stalled right now, but we are seeing some movement, so that's a good thing. And I'm hoping to also do a solar phase two in DC. So that's also in the works too.
Okay, I'm glad you actually mentioned senior housing, because that is a kind of a newer niche that people are getting more and more interested in, especially as the baby boomer population is rising every day. So can you talk a little bit about just that niche of development with senior housing?
Sure. So with Enterprise Homes, they acquired the shelter group portfolio for seniors. So, oh my gosh, it was over 40 properties throughout Maryland, Pennsylvania, and I think Delaware too. Most of them were all senior. There were a few families, but they acquired a ton of senior properties. CPDC, we had a few senior properties. Most of them were adaptive reuse, which means we had a high school that we converted into senior apartments, which is really cool. So we have it in Richmond, Baltimore, actually two in Richmond, Baltimore, and Annapolis. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing more and more folks need senior housing, need assisted living. And you have a lot of folks that are in our, you know, our family projects that are aging. I mean, they've been living in the same apartment for 30 years. Mm-hmm. So no, Miss Smith can't get up the steps like she used to, or she needs help getting up out of the shower now. Like, it's, where does she go? Mm-hmm. You know, she can't afford to go into assisted living. So how do we help her? These are conversations that aren't just happening at my job, but they're happening around the country. Well, happening around the country now, these type of conversations. The need is only going to go up.
Now, from a development standpoint, is there some extra incentive to doing senior housing, kind of like how, you know, affordable housing, you can get credits and additional benefits from the local municipality? Is there anything like that specifically for senior housing?
That's a really good question. I have not seen that as of yet.
Okay. So what's the main benefit to doing it is maybe because it's lower impact tenants or...
We do find that our senior properties hold up much better. Mm-hmm. They're seniors. They're coming downstairs to look for the mail or going to, you know, a doctor's appointment, or, you know, they're not in and out of the building as much as like a family development is. That's a really good question. I haven't had that one. There's a need for it. Right. I think that's really what you got going for it. There's a need. Folks are getting older. We have a project in DC at the Edgewood campus in Northeast DC, mm-hmm, that we're actually building a brand new building, and it's going to be assisted living. It's like 180 units with some kind of care facility on the first floor. And most of the residents from that property are coming from other parts of the Edgewood campus, which is, yeah, okay, they're aging in place.
Yeah, no, that's great, though, that they can still remain in their same neighborhood, their same community. So mm-hmm, it doesn't have a drastic change of lifestyle. So that's awesome. And then just in terms of affordable housing development, like, it's hard enough getting the debt and equity together on any type of real estate project, but how would you say like getting those low income tax credits and affordable housing tax credit adds like another layer to the mix?
You already know. it's funny because I've never done market rate housing. I only like kind of know. Mm-hmm. But what I do know is they don't have to worry about low-income housing tax credits and competing for these tax credits. Like, you have 9% and 4%. And with 9% credits, those are very valuable because they're worth 70% of the equity, whereas 4% are worth 30% or 40% of the equity. So it's like everybody wants 9%, but states can't afford to give everybody 9% credits. So you have to compete for them. And you have to be strategic. Like, maybe your 60 unit deal can apply for it and get it, but not your 300 unit deal. That's a 4% bond type deal. But there's more fees associated with bonds. I feel, you know, we have asset managers and property managers that have to deal with the whole compliance side of things.
Right.
Oh my God. Like, I, you know, it's another world. Like, I always I tell folks, because I do mentor students at the University of Maryland, I always say, like, if you can do affordable housing, I'm sure you could do market rate with your eyes closed.
Wow. Now, does DC or like PG County have any like diversity supplier initiative that kind of make you a little bit more competitive for those tax credits?
So DC and the state of Maryland and Prince George's County, they do like recognize you if you have minority owner, like minority companies on your team.
Okay.
So if you have like an architect or interior designer, contractors, subcontractors, they usually have requirements, and if you go above and beyond, you get more points for that. Okay. So you have a lot of like companies that are like, hey, yeah, we're woman owned, or yeah, we're black owned, we can help you out.
Definitely. Like I said, use your diversity.
Exactly. To your advantage.
Okay. Cool. Well, anything else you want to let us know about before we wrap it up and go to the last set of questions?
Real estate is all about who you know. Always, like, you know, like, I'm really glad Maisha connected us. Networking is huge in this field. You know, like I I met Shalinda, my current boss, back when I was first out of undergrad. I was working with someone at the time who worked with CPDC, and that's how I got to meet Shalinda. And I'm like, man, she's so amazing. I want to get to know her. And you know, years went by, and I applied for this job, and she's like, I remember you, you know, yeah, why not? Like, you just never know. So I think one of my biggest takeaways is, you know, it's all about who you know, don't burn your bridges, and don't ever take anything for granted when it comes to meeting folks.
Amen. That's like a big theme of this show. Everybody, almost all the guests keep saying it's all about networking. Yep. It's all about relationships for sure. So
it really is.
Definitely. The same thing you said about Shalinda is what Maisha said about you. Like, oh my God, aww, how awesome. Like, I want to be like her when I grow up.
She's awesome. Maisha's great.
Cool. All right. So let's just wrap it up and go to the last set of questions. This is the Fabulous Four. And this is where, you know, we ask everybody the same question. So just whatever comes to mind, just go for it. So the first question is, what is your favorite real estate book?
So, you know, I was reading this question, and I'm like, man. So there's one book that I read, oh my God, I read it years ago. It is the Life and Death of Great American Cities by Jane Jacobs. Mm-hmm. It's about community planning, like neighborhood planning, the importance of having eyes on the street. It's very like about the way you build out your communities and its uses. It's an awesome book. I read it. Oh gosh, I think I read that at Morgan, but it's a great book. I'm looking at it right now. It's a great book. And I have to plug in, because I have not finished reading it, but I have to say, I highly recommend Color of Law by Richard Rothstein. It's fabulous. It talks about racial inequities when it comes to real estate finance, how Black people weren't approving for VA loans, but white people were. Mm-hmm. Redlining, things like that. My coworkers have been telling me forever to read this book. Now that we're in a pandemic, I'm actually reading the book. But it's awesome. Okay. Highly recommend it.
Same. I've been hearing a lot about that book. I've read The Color of Money, which is
okay. Like I read that one.
Counterpart. Okay. Yeah. So that one's similar, but I definitely want to read The Color of Law too. So good.
Definitely.
I got to check it out. And I'm glad that you said about the first book, because with real estate development, it's not all just about the like technical part of it or the finance part of it, or like this, the structures go here. It's also like kind of like the sociology mm-hmm. of things, and, you know,
yes.
different neighborhoods and communities and places that make sense.
Exactly.
About what the people want, give them what they want, but make it make sense for this new area. So
it's
definitely great.
Definitely. You hit it on the head. It's not it's not just about four walls. Like, we, our old president, he used to say, stand on the corner lot of our property and look out. What do you see? Do we see any more? Do we see partnerships we could form? Do we see a vacant lot that we could take over and make it into something else? Like, what can we do to be part of this community and help, you know, not only our building, but the surrounding area thrive? So yeah, highly, you hit it on the head.
Awesome. All right. So the second question, you kind of already said it, but you can give us some more advice is, you know, going back, you know, if you were just getting started in real estate, what are some advice that you would give your younger self?
This was a good question too. There's so much advice I'd give my younger self. The biggest piece of advice is to always believe in yourself. Never give up. It's not easy. Real estate is cyclical. My first real estate job out of college, I was laid off. It was in the middle of a recession. And I am I was straight A types, you know, top, you know, summa cum laude, graduated Morgan. I'm like, laid off? Like, me? That doesn't happen. Like, maybe I should have went into architecture after all. Like, you know, I started second guessing a lot of stuff. And I was like, you know, no, this is happening for a reason. You know, through that job is how I met Shalinda. But it was just, I was like, no, I'm here for a reason. I can't give up. That's when I got interested in green building, and the rest is history. So I think telling myself back then, like, just persevere. Stick it out. You have a purpose.
Yeah, and, usually when you're getting into something when everybody else is running away, that's the best time to get into it.
That's true.
And then you said that's when you got into green building. That was perfect timing because before it wasn't like as big of a deal as it is now. So you got in that wave early.
Definitely, yeah.
Cool. So what, number three question is, what do you personally want to learn more about in real estate?
You know, we talked about senior housing. So my final project in Morgan was actually about baby boomer housing. Mm-hmm. And so I've actually had an interest in senior housing for years. Like, just, my dad's a boomer, my mom was a boomer, like, you know, it's happening. They're going to get older. So, and most of them are still alive. So where are they going to live? I think just trying to learn more about how to accommodate seniors. And it's not going to look the same way as it looked for our grandparents, or, you know, it's going to look different. They have money. They're still able. They're not fragile. What does this look like? And how can we incorporate some cool technologies to accommodate them? That's what I want to learn more about.
Definitely exciting times. And a lot of people it's not just like the big multi-unit, fast sprawling buildings of senior housing. Like, some people are turning single family homes into senior housing. So there's
that's true.
To get involved in it for sure. So, all right.
Very
so
true.
The last question is to give a shout out to another woman that's doing some amazing things in real estate.
Maisha's doing awesome. I'm not gonna, like, I gotta say, you know, she's awesome. She is learning a whole lot. She's taught me a lot. She's phenomenal. I'm glad you had her on the show. I gotta shout out my boss. I mentioned her 4 or 5 times in our talk, Shalinda. Shalinda is great. She's a Delta. I don't hold it against her.
we love but, the Reds.
Exactly, right? We love the Reds. But Shalinda is awesome. She's a firecracker, and she is so supportive. She is probably one of my biggest cheerleaders when it comes to professional, where I'm at now. So she's my shout out. She's my shout out.
Cool. Shout out to her. So if there's anybody out there listening that wants to get in contact with you, or ways to get in contact to do business or anything with you, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, you can email me. I'm on LinkedIn. I don't know how many Jessica Joneses are on LinkedIn. There's probably a ton of us. But I do have an updated picture on LinkedIn. But my email address is jjones@enterprisecommunity.org. It's pretty simple. And I mean, they know you, Jessica. So like if someone says, hey, I want to talk to that girl who was talking about solar, you can totally give them my info. I'm
Absolutely. Okay with that. Yeah. It's gonna be, as always, it's going to be in the show notes and on YouTube. It's contact information is going to be awesome. Out there. So you can reach out directly. But yeah, if you want to interact with her through me, definitely, definitely. All right. So any last words for our listeners, any projects you have coming up, anything else that you want to kind of promote or bring light to?
Just rounding back to solar. Not going to get political, but depending on how elections go, there's a possibility for, you know, an extension in the ITC. The it's the tax credit, the federal renewable energy tax credit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we can get an extension, fingers crossed, that means we could do more work, more solar, more renewable energy projects, not only in DC, but in other parts of the country. And, you know, hopefully we'll see, you know, like I don't want folks to shy away from solar or to shy away from, you know, energy. It's here to stay. That could be my green tree hugger person in me, but it's here to stay. If you have questions about it, please like reach out to me. I'd love to talk about solar. There's enough of the pie for everybody to go around.
Yeah, I think it's going to be eventually, that's going to be pretty much the standard. You know, those big companies like Apple, you know, who are
Amazon,
the S&P, they're moving to that wave. So
they are. Kind
of follow the money, basically. So that's what they're getting into. So, all right. Well, that was, you know, pretty much a wrap. I thank you. Appreciate it so much for taking this time to come on and talk to us, spread a lot of knowledge about green building and solar energy, senior housing development, so much.
So we much talked about a lot. So Jessica, it's been a pleasure. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thank you so, so much. So definitely looking forward to remaining in contact. And like I told you before, I'm planning to invest back home in D.C. within the next year or two. I've got to come back to the area to get more involved in the community. So I appreciate you once again. And any way I can help you with anything that you have going on, definitely do not hesitate to let me know.
Awesome. Will do.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. This was another episode of Pretty Girls Love Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Washington. Again, this is my guest, Jessica Jones. She's pretty awesome. Thank you again for, you know, joining us on the show here. And all right, signing off here. Have a good one.